ॐ जिनचमिनन्दस्य जिनजिनशलकया चक्षुस्मिलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनुविष्टं स्थितं येन भूतले सायं रूपकजमयं ददति स्वपनन्तिकम् वंशकपटुभ्यश्च पिबसिन्धुभ्यश्च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः The last verse that you have written down that we did, the number. Do you have anything written down? I hope so. Dharaman, do you know what?
30.
We got up to 30. 31. The mantras or prayers that Chitraketu Maharaj was given by Narada Muni were powerful, effective, deep in meaning. They showed how the Lord is full in different aspects, and that He is the source of the Brahman. Ramano hi pratishtaham. How Brahman, the all-pervading oneness of everything, which often is seen as the ultimate truth, that too rests upon Him. The cosmos, the universe rests upon Him. He is the source of that. He is the creator. The living entities fully depend upon Him. He, actually, the living entities are called Vimanansa, or they are separate individuals, parts of Him, small separated parts, and as Prabhupada would call the jivas, the living entities, parts and parcels, little individual units of spiritual energy that are never entirely separated from the Lord and are yet nevertheless not the Lord. Like the sun rays are sun. You can't say that the sun rays aren't sun, but one can't, on the other hand, say that the sun rays are sun. It's not that they're not equal to the sun, because if the sun was in the room, we would be more than warmed. We would be cooked. We would be ashified immediately. So the living entity also is part of Him, and also He is in the heart of every living entity, giving the life, practically speaking, to that tiny, insignificant soul, the living entity, whom that is what we are. Without the Lord, we have nothing. We have no life. Our body won't work, even though it is the soul itself that brings consciousness to the body. But yet, without the Lord, the soul can't do it, isn't able to do anything. Because at every step, we are dependent. At every step, this makes us quite uncomfortable to be fully dependent. Why? Is because in this material world, in this world, being dependent is a dangerous thing, because we're then at the mercy of another. And in this world, ultimately, there is no mercy. Or it's very rare, very dangerous to be dependent upon another, especially in the age of Kali, Kali Yuga, the age of quarrel that we live in now, the age of difficulties, the Iron Age. So, regardless of that fact, still we are always dependent upon the Lord and the living entity, ourselves. We are meant to take shelter of the Lord and rejoin Him, so to speak, regain our dependent, loving relationship with him. So in the final verse that Chitraketu Maharaj heard and then recited, the final mantra, the final prayer, described that that Lord, although he is the source of everything, yet he has lotus feet, and the devotees massage those lotus feet. In other words, that Lord is a person. They massage the lotus feet of the Lord with their lotus bud-like hands. So the Lord, although all-powerful, although the source of Brahman, the all-pervadingness, although the creator of the cosmos, although the Lord within everyone's heart, although the source of the living entities, and the one whom the living entities depend upon, still he is a person. He is an unlimited person, a supreme person. So Chitraketu took those mantras, and after Narada Muni and Angira Muni left to Brahmaloka, to a very, very wonderful, subtle planet within the material world, then he began to meditate upon these mantras, and he, after a very short time, achieved perfection. And as an intermediate stage, he attained a position known as Vidyadharas. He ruled a planet where there are very, very pious living entities go, who are very, very pure and powerful. Not the spiritual world, in the material world. So he became on that level. And then, only within a few days, he actually saw the Lord Anantadev. Anantadev is an expansion of an expansion of the Supreme Lord, Krishna. Krishna's Tu Bhagavan Sayam. But there is no difference between the expansion and the original Lord, any more than there is a difference between one candle lit from another candle. One after another, candles may be lit, but they all have the same potency as the original candle, although there is nevertheless an original candle. So this Anantadev is an expansion of the Lord, whom Chitraketu Maharaj saw. Another name for Anantadev is Shankarshan. And Ananta means unlimited. So when he saw the Lord, now we'll read text 30, this is what he saw. Upon reaching the shelter of Lord Shesha, another name for Anantadev, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Chitraketu, saw that he was as white as the white fibers of a lotus flower. He was dressed in bluish garments and adorned with a brilliantly glittering helmet, armor, belt, and bangles. So not only did he have lotus feet, or does the Lord have lotus feet, but he has arms. And if he's wearing a helmet upon his head, that means he has a head as well. So he's a person. The Lord is a person. He has qualities and characteristics, personality, definite, specific attributes. So this is wonderful. This is most wonderful. He's the most beautiful, the most wonderful. His face was smiling, and his eyes were reddish. He was surrounded by such exalted, liberated persons as Sanat Kumar. As soon as Maharaj Chitraketu saw the Supreme Lord, he was cleansed of all material contamination and situated in his original Krishna consciousness. Being completely purified, he became silent and grave, and because of love for the Lord, tears fell from his eyes and his hair stood on end in ecstasy. With great devotion and love, he offered his respectful obeisances unto the original personality of Godhead. Prabhupada's short purport to that verse describing how he was purified by directly seeing the Lord. Here's what Prabhupada explains. The word tat-darshina dvasta samastakil basha is very important in this verse. If one regularly sees the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the temple, one will gradually be disinfected of all material desires simply by visiting the temple and seeing the deity. So material desires, therefore, are considered infections. They are not something that's wonderful and that we should spend all our time trying to satisfy them. Rather, they are disease, which takes us away from our original natural healthy condition of purity, of love for Krishna, and of love for all others. When one is freed from all the results of sinful activities, one will be purified, and with a healthy mind completely cleansed, he will increasingly make progress in Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada is recommending to see the deity and offer prayers to the deity and to bow down before the deity and to offer flowers to the deity and fruits to the deity, donations of all sorts to the deities. And that way one's heart becomes cleansed. We are benefited. With tears of love and affection, Chitraketu repeatedly moistened the resting place of the Supreme Lord's lotus feet. Because his voice was choked in ecstasy, because tears from the eyes are a symptom of ecstasy. For a considerable time, he was unable to utter any of the letters of the alphabet to order the Lord's suitable prayers, because when one sees the Lord in person before us, or person before us in the form of the deity, it's proper to offer prayers, to glorify the Lord, to ask for benedictions. So he was unable to offer prayers at first. Why? Because he was feeling so ecstatic and his eyes were shedding tears. Nayanangalarashudharaya vadanam gadgadarudayagira pulakar nachitambapukada tavanamagrane bhavishyati. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains that when will this day come when we also will, our tears will be over, our eyes will be overflooded with tears, and our hair will stand upon on edge by associating with the Lord, by chanting his holy name. When will our heart melt in that way? And then be able to offer prayers. And Prabhupada's purport explains that the letters of the alphabet are specifically meant to Lord, offer the Lord suitable prayers. In other words, the letters of the alphabet form words. And what is the purpose of words? To glorify God. In other words, our mouth, our face, our bodies should be dedicated to the service of the Lord one way or another. And that will, when it is done with a full loving heart, when we are fully surrendered in the Lord's service with a heart cleansed of the infection of material desires, selfish desires, petty selfish desires. And rather, on the other hand, when we love the Lord and are serving Him, then that is our natural condition, and that is the pure condition of the living entity. And when we are like that, we no longer have to be in the material world any longer. Text 33. Thereafter, by controlling his mind with his intelligence and thus restricting his senses from external engagements, he recovered suitable words with which to express his feelings, his loving feelings. Thus he began to offer prayers to the Lord, who is the personification of the holy scriptures, the Satvita-samhitas, like the Brahma-samhita and the Narada-pancharatra, and who is the spiritual master of all. He offered his prayers as follows. Prabhupada's purport explains that one shouldn't offer prayers or sing the songs that are composed by non-devotees, because one who is a pure soul, his prayers are spiritual. Actually, they're composed of the spiritual energy, and they have a different potency than the words of the song, the composition of alphabet of the songs composed by mundane personalities who are under the control of the material energy. So the prayers of the devotees and the songs that they sing, they can be very, very simple, but they have a special potency because they are spiritual. They are of the spiritual energy. And they gift the living entity with a spiritual heart, a heart that's free of material contamination and is in love with Krishna. So here's his first prayer. So by saying that we shouldn't mentally become entangled with materialistic songs or non-devotional prayers, what Prabhupada is doing is leading us to take shelter of these type of prayers. Because there's always a anvior vatirik. There is the positive instruction and the negative instruction. Don't do this, but do this. And when we hear the prayers of exalted personality, the words that are coming from their hearts, then we can enter into the same moods as they have. That's the purpose. That we enter in the same mood. We touch, by touching their hearts touch us. And we enter into their moods. And we get a glimpse of what it's like to have a pure heart that's in love with Krishna. We get a taste of that sweetness. So here is the prayers offered by pure Chitraketu. And there are quite a few of them here. And we'll read just a few in Prabhupada's purports today. So Chitraketu Maharaj said, "O unconquerable Lord, although you cannot be conquered by anyone, by definition, God is the all-powerful, He's the greatest. No one or nothing can conquer Him because no one or nothing is more powerful than He is. So although you cannot be conquered by anyone, you are certainly conquered by devotees who have control of the mind and senses. They keep you under their control because you are causelessly merciful to devotees who desire no material profit from you. Indeed, you give yourself to them, and because of this, you also have full control over your devotees." How interesting that it is Chitraketu Maharaj who is making this point, because in the beginning of what we heard about him, he was simply full of one material desire, his heart. No matter what else he had, his heart was simply filled with a desire for a son. And therefore, because he had that desire so strongly, he was unable to have an actual spiritual desire. So what is the benefit of losing our material desires? If we lose our material desires, our tendency is to think we've lost everything. What we have, we'll have nothing, and we won't exist practically. If we took away all the material parts of us, it seems almost that there'll be nothing left. But actually, the devotion that is free from material desires, it is so powerful that the unconquerable Lord can become conquered. In other words, what does it mean to be conquered? It means that He gives them, as the verse says, He places Himself out of their love for Him, who approach Him not wanting anything, anything material from Him, but rather want to serve Him with great love, have no material desires. Such devotees place the Lord, due to their purity, under their control. Indeed, you give yourself to them. The unconquerable Lord is conquered by the love of his devotees. And because of this, you also have full control over your devotees. So what an amazing relationship the Lord has with his devotees. He completely controls them, because after all, they are devotees. But they, on the other hand, completely control him. This is the power of love for Krishna. And this is fully exhibited, this side, where the unconquerable Lord becomes completely subserviated to his devotees, becomes fully exhibited in Vrindavan by the damsels of Braja. By all the residents of Vrindavan, practically speaking. Their love is so complete and full, they have complete and full control over the Lord, the Supreme Lord, who is the controller of the universe, who is the Paramatma in everyone's heart, who is the creator, the Brahman is resting upon him. And this Lord becomes subservient to his devotees because of their love, especially in Braj. Purport. The Lord and his devotees both conquer. The Lord is conquered by the devotees, and the devotees are conquered by the Lord. Because of being conquered by one another, they both derive transcendental bliss from their relationship. The highest perfection of this mutual conquering is exhibited by Krishna and the gopis. The gopis conquered Krishna, and Krishna conquered the gopis. Thus, whenever Krishna played his flute, he conquered the minds of the gopis, and without seeing the gopis, Krishna could not be happy. Other transcendentalists, such as jnanis and yogis, cannot conquer the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Only pure devotees can conquer him. Pure devotees are described as samamati, which means they never deviate from devotional service under any circumstance. It is not that devotees worship the Supreme Lord only when happy. They worship him even when in distress. And also, it is not only that they worship him when in distress, they worship him when they're happy, continuously worshiping him. Happiness and distress do not hamper the process of devotional service. Therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam says that devotional service is a haituki apratiyata, apratiyata, unmotivated and uninterrupted. When a devotee offers devotional service to the Lord without any motive, anyabhilasita sunyam, his service cannot be hampered by any material condition, apratihata. Thus a devotee who offers service in all conditions of life can conquer the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That means whether it's a good day or a bad day, whether we're happy or sad, in a good mood or a bad mood, whether we're this or we're that, regardless, if we can keep samamati, samamati literally means equal intelligence, or a focused mind, if we could somehow be fully focused on the Lord, regardless of our external condition, that type of devotion conquers him, who offers service in all conditions, regardless of what is going on externally. A special distinction between devotees and the other transcendentalists, namely the jnanis and the yogis, is that the jnanis and yogis artificially try to become one with the Supreme, whereas devotees never aspire such an impossible accomplishment. Devotees know that their position is to be eternally servants of the Supreme Lord and never to be one with him. Therefore, they are called samamati or jitatma. They detest oneness with the Supreme. They have no lusty desires for oneness. Instead, their desire is to be freed from all material hankering. Therefore, they are called nishkam, desireless. They have no desire, only to serve. And that desire to serve Krishna out of devotion is called desirelessness. And bhukti mukti siddhi kami shakali ashanta. Everyone else has desires, either to become rich, famous, to become one with the Lord, to have powers, whatever. Everyone else, other than the pure devotees, is filled with desires, and therefore, bhakti mukti siddhi kame shakali ashanta. Once one has desires, then one has to try and control things. And as soon as one is trying to control things, one is going to be very disappointed because things are simply out of our control. And therefore, ashanta, unpeaceful. But the devotee accepts whatever mercy Krishna gives him, in whatever form it takes, as Krishna's mercy. And he accepts it, and he goes on trying to serve God regardless of anything external. Even if he has a distaste for something and his mind is repelled by the external circumstance, he doesn't let that stop his service to the Lord. That is the specific characteristic of a pure devotee that Prabhupada is describing here. And such devotees, their love, obviously one's love has to be so deep and one's relationship with the Lord has to be so powerful, that love melts and conquers the heart of the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord becomes conquered. So the a living entity cannot exist without desires. But desires that can never be fulfilled are called kam, lusty desires. Kamastaishtar vritagyana. Because of lusty desires of all different varieties, not just physical lust, but everything that is, all desires that are self-centered, that cannot truly satisfy one, these are in the category of kam. So because of these lusty desires, non-devotees are deprived of their intelligence. Thus they are unable to conquer the Supreme Lord. Whereas devotees, being free from such unreasonable desires, can conquer the Lord. Such devotees are also conquered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. On the other hand, not only do they conquer the Lord conquers them. Because they are pure, being freed from all material desires, they fully surrender to the Supreme Lord, and therefore the Lord conquers them. Such devotees never aspire for liberation. They simply desire to serve the lotus feet of the Lord. No desire to conquer anything. The only desire is to serve. Because they serve the Lord without desires for remuneration, they don't want anything in exchange for their service, it is pure love. It's so attractive, this pure loving state of just giving and not wanting in return. Because they have that, they can conquer the mercy of the Lord. The Lord is by nature very merciful, and when he sees that his servant is working without desires for material profit, naturally he is conquered. Devotees are always engaged in service. Savaimana Krishna Padaravindayor Vachamsi Vaikuntigunanavanane. All the activities of their senses are engaged in the service of the Lord. Because of such devotion, the Lord gives himself to his devotees as if they could use him for any purpose they might desire. Of course, devotees have no purpose other than to serve. When a devotee fully surrenders and has no aspiration for material profit, the Lord certainly gives him all opportunities for service. This is the position of the Lord when conquered by his devotees. Second prayer. So that first one explained how the Lord is conquered by the devotee who controls his mind and senses and has no material desires but devotionally serves. This verse. My dear Lord, this cosmic manifestation and its creation, maintenance, and annihilation are all but your opulences. Since Lord Brahma and other creators are nothing but small portions of a portion of you, their partial power to create does not make them God, Ishvara. Their consciousness of themselves as separate lords is therefore merely false prestige. It is not valid. So here he's saying, again what the Supreme Lord is, that there are so many Ishwaras. Ishwara means controllers. So everyone in this world is a controller to some degree or another. And no one is satisfied with the degree that they're in control, and therefore one wants to increase his power more. Power means shakti. Sanskrit. The power to control, because by controlling we can enjoy. The more we can control, the more power we have, the more we have the ability to fulfill our desires. So everyone is Ishwara to one degree or another, a controller. So the demigods are those powerful living entities who have an extraordinary amount of control, but yet their ability to control is apportioned to them by the Supreme Controller, just as each and every one of us, our ability to control, our power and potency, and everyone has power and potency, this is opulence. Everyone has opulences of one sort or another, either money, wealth, beauty, fame, knowledge, renunciation, or strength. These are the six opulences. So why do people want these things? Because of their power to control. So every one of us uses these, whatever we have, to control. But yet that is given to us, that ability, that shakti, that power is given to us by the Supreme Lord, who is the Supreme Controller. So anyone thinking themselves, and the finger here is being pointed specifically by Chetuketu Maharaj to the demigods, if one thinks of oneself as a separate lord, it is false prestige, a false conception of oneself, because we are not separate or independent, and our ability to control again is a gift of the Supreme Lord, and it can be removed just as it can be given. Prabhupada's purport. A devotee who is fully surrendered to the lotus feet of the Lord knows very well that the creative energy of the living entities, from Lord Brahma down to the small ant, exists. So the ants also have abilities. The flies can fly. The bugs can bug people. Every creature. The moles can burrow, whatever they do. They all have abilities, and these all coming from the Lord. From Brahma, from the big abilities to the smallest, exist because the living entities are parts and parcels of the Lord. In Bhagavad Gita 15:7, the Lord says, Mamayivangso jivaloke jivabhuta sanatana. The living entities in this conditioned world are my eternal fragmental parts. The living entities are nothing but very small portions of the Supreme Spirit, like sparks of a fire. Because they are part of the Supreme, they have a creative quality in a very minute quantity. The so-called scientists of the modern materialistic world are proud because they have created modern facilities, like great airplanes. But the credit for creating the airplane should go to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, not to the scientists who have invented or created the so-called wonderful products. So the scientists shouldn't be, or no one should be proud. And in Kali Yuga, in this age, even a pauper is proud of his penny. Everyone is proud. Even if we have something very, very tiny, we are very proud. The first consideration is the intelligence of the scientists who must be elevated by the dictation of the Supreme Lord, who says in the Bhagavad Gita 15:15, Matir Smitim Jnanam Apavanam Cha. From me comes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. Because the Supreme Lord of Supersouls sits within the core of every living entity's heart, the dictation by which one advances in scientific knowledge or creative faculties comes from him. Furthermore, the ingredients to manufacture wonderful machines like airplanes. What is the most wonderful machine?
Computer.
What was? Yes, I think so.
The body.
Yes.
Automobiles.
Automobiles, yes. They're quite wonderful too. What other wonderful machines are there? Bread makers. Those are really wonderful machines. Previously, people had to labor so hard kneading their bread and putting in the oven. Yes, dishwashing machines too. And now we can do it all by machine. Yes.
Creating health problems.
The machine's great health problems.
Creating health problems for ourselves.
Yes. And mental problems too. And we become so dependent on these things. You get the machines to become independent because you don't like washing or whatever. Become so dependent on the machine. And you have to work work hard to buy the machine that breaks down or gets outdated and needs to be changed, etc. We become so dependent. We can't think of existing in a simple way. And actually speaking, the simpler we live, the happier we are, actually. We think that the automobiles they've given us so much progress, and they have on a certain level, technological level. Now, instead of people working out of their homes, they can travel 100 miles to go to work, and takes them an hour or two to go to work, an hour or two to come back. So when you think about it, is that actually progress? Progress and inconvenience. People lived simply, but they had their families, and they shared so much love. Now, so everything is disjointed. Previously, there's hundreds of books written about how men nowadays. Since just imagine previously. What's the thing that the politicians talk about as their greatest achievement? Creating jobs. But previously there weren't even jobs. That they had to create factories where bring in big multinational corporations to exploit the people and put people in factories doing mindless work or whatever. These jobs, 9-to-5 jobs, didn't exist even. People worked the fields, or they were craftsmen, they made things, or they did this or that and somehow made a living to live simply. So there are so many books written how contemporary men are destroyed by the fact that they never see their fathers, because their fathers have these 9-to-5 jobs, and counting transportation, it's maybe 6 or 7, so 12 hours a day. And previously, the boys would be with their fathers all day, working in the fields or something like that, and they'd naturally fall into they'd learn about life from their fathers, they'd learn how to view how the world is viewed from an adult's eye, and now there's none of that. Everything is different, topsy-turvy. And the result is not actually advancement, meaning increase in happiness and peace and prosperity. Previously, the man would work in the world, and his wife, the mother of the children, would stay home and take care of the house, and they would, and the children, and whatever, and they would live. But now, with the prosperity that we have, both the husband and the wife have to work most of the time, or very often. They have to. It's not even a choice. Is that advancement? More work? So it is a bluff, actually. And everyone is bought into the bluff. So the real creator of the machines, who's given the intelligence, whose materials are supplied, is the Lord. And it is due to the pride of the individuals that they dare, as Prabhupada said, they dare declare that there is no God, even though their own intelligence and the materials they're creating from also come from Him. Text 36. So, you exist, Chitraketu says, in the beginning, the middle, and end of everything. From the most minute particle of the cosmic manifestation, the atom, to the gigantic universes and total material energy. So you are everywhere, in everything. Nonetheless, you are eternal, having no beginning, end, or middle. You're in the beginning and middle and end of everything, but you yourself have no beginning, middle, or end. You are perceived to exist in these three phases, and thus you are permanent. When the cosmic manifestation does not exist, you exist as the original potency. So everything is resting upon the Lord in all its different stages, and even when the entire material existence is annihilated, still the Lord exists, although matter doesn't exist. So His existence doesn't depend on the existence of matter. So He exists separately, and all the matter exists within Him, even at that time. So He exists as the original potency during that time. Prabhupada's purport. The Brahma Samhita says, Advaita machutam anadiram anadir anantarupam adhyam purana purusham navayovanam cha vedeshu dolabhama dolabham atma bhaktao govindamari purusham tamaham vajami. I worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, Govinda, who is the original person, absolute, infallible, without beginning, although expanded into unlimited forms, still the same original, the oldest, and the person always appearing as a fresh youth. So although these big concepts of the Lord, the Creator, He's everywhere in the beginning, middle, and end of everything, and at the annihilation of the universe, all this potency is within Him in rest. But yet, and He has so many expansions of God, Ananta Dev, so many unlimited expansions. He's the Adhyam Prana Purusha, the original, oldest person, but yet Navayovanam Cha. He doesn't have the longest of beards because he's the oldest of persons. Rather, he's a freshly blooming youth. This is Govinda or Krishna. And his body is Sachidananda Vigraha, composed not of blood and bones and marrow, etc., but composed of eternity, bliss, and knowledge, a spiritual body. Just as wonderful. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has no cause, for He is the cause of everything. So one person asked Prabhupada, he said, okay, I have a question. What is the cause of God? Who caused? Where does He come from? And Prabhupada said, if you understand what God means, you'll understand the answer to that question. God means He who has no cause. That's the definition of God. He's the supreme cause. Sarva karana karanam. So the Lord, He's the cause of everything. He's beyond the workings of cause and effect. He is eternally existing. And in another verse, the Brahma Samhita says, Andantarasta paramanu chayantarastam. The Lord exists within the gigantic universe and within the atom. The descent of the Lord into the atom and the universe indicates that without His presence, nothing could factually exist. Everything is resting upon Him. Scientists say that the water is a combination of hydrogen and oxygen. But when they see a vast ocean, they are puzzled about where such a quantity of hydrogen and oxygen could have come from. They think that everything evolved from chemicals, but where did the chemicals come from? That they do not know. Since the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the cause of all causes, He can produce immense quantities of chemicals to create a situation for chemical evolution. We actually see that chemicals are produced from living entities. Because usually the scientists say that life comes from matter, but Prabhupada is saying here that matter, chemicals, comes from life. For example, a lemon tree, which is alive, produces many tons of citric acid. The citric acid is not the cause of the tree. The chemicals don't cause the life in the tree. Rather, the tree is the cause of the acid. That the material, the chemicals, come from the life, the thing that's alive, the tree. Similarly, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the cause of everything. He is life, and He causes everything else. He is the cause of the tree that produces the citric acid, Bijam Mam Savabhutanam. Devotees can see that the original potencies causing the cosmic manifestation are not in chemicals, but in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for He is the cause of the chemicals. Everything is caused or manifested by the energy of the Supreme Lord. And when everything is annihilated or dissolved, the original potency enters the body of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, this verse says, Adavante picha satvanam yadruvam taravantaralepi. The word dhruva means permanent. The permanent reality is Krishna, not this cosmic manifestation. That's wonderful. The permanent reality is Krishna. In other words, this cosmic world is always shifting. And it's so frustrating because it's shifting. And we are in this, if we have material consciousness, we are caught in this ever-shifting, changing material world. Our mind changes, our body changes, our intelligence changes, our shoe size changes when we're young. If we can focus our consciousness upon that which is not changing within all the changing, then we can have a steady, peaceful consciousness. That which is not changing is that Krishna is at the bottom of everything. And if we can somehow learn to see Krishna in everything, then we are most fortunate. So, the permanent reality is Krishna, not this cosmic manifestation. Krishna is the cause of everything. Arjuna recognized Lord Sri Krishna. Aham Adi, Bhagavad Gita says, Aham Adi, He Devanam, and Matya Savam Pravartate. Krishna is the original cause of everything. Arjuna recognizes Lord Sri Krishna as the original person, Purusham, Shashvatam, Divyam, Adidevam, Ajam, Vibhum. And the Brahma Samhita describes Him as the original person, Govindam, Adi, Purusham. He is the cause of all causes, whether at the beginning, at the end, or in the middle. Next verse. Every universe is covered by seven layers. Earth, water, fire, air, sky, and the total energy and false ego, each 10 times greater than the previous one. There are innumerable universes beside this one, and although they are unlimitedly large, they move about like atoms in you. Therefore you are called unlimited, Ananta. So this is God. Although He is a person so beautiful and delicate, with soft skin and lotus-like eyes and curly dark hair, still all the universes, and there are more than one, exist like atoms within Him. They are insignificant. So that which we consider everything is, practically speaking, atomic, practically nothing, compared to the Lord. So what should we do? Get enamored, entangled in the everything, the insignificant everything of the material world, or try to understand, which is always changing and causing us so much difficulty because we focus our consciousness on it? Or should we place our consciousness with great devotion at His lotus feet, the cause of all causes, who is very, very wonderful, very merciful, as Chituketu Maharaj has done? Therefore, because you are unlimited, O Lord, you are called Ananta. We'll read some of Prabhupada's purport, the last half. This gives an idea of the meaning of Ananta, unlimited. And it also makes it appear foolish when people say, I am God, we are all God. How foolish to get an idea of what God is. How is it, if I'm God, how did I get stuck like this? So much difficulty struggling with this. Nothing works the way I want to. So how am I God? What a ridiculous supposition. And then they say, well, all this misery you see is illusion. And when you forget the illusion, then you will understand that you are the Lord. But how did illusion somehow overpower me if I'm the Lord? I'm not the Lord even of illusion. What am I the Lord of if I'm in so much illusion? So we're not the Lord. We are just tiny. We're not different from Him, like the spark is not different from the fire, but we are tiny sparks. This gives us an idea of the meaning of Ananta, unlimited. What is to be said of the unlimited potency and existence of the Lord? This verse describes the coverings of the universe. The fourth covering is earth. The first covering is earth. The second is water. The third is fire. The fourth is air. The fifth is ether or sky. The sixth is the total material energy. And the seventh is the false ego. Beginning with the covering of earth, each covering is 10 times greater than the previous one. Thus we can only imagine how great each universe is. And there are many millions of universes, as stated by the Lord Himself in the Bhagavad Gita. Atava bahunaitena kim jatena tavarjana vistabhyaham idam krishnam ekam senasti to jagat. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, for what need is there, Arjuna, for all this detailed knowledge? With a single fragment of myself, with just a tiny part of my energy, ekam sena, eka amsa, just one little part of myself, stito jagat, I maintain and control the entire universe by a little bit of my potency. I pervade and support this entire universe. With a single fragment of myself, I pervade and support this entire universe. The entire material world manifests only 1/4 of the Supreme Lord's energy. Therefore, He is called Ananta, unlimited. Text 38. You're all doing very well in such a long, non-action, philosophical class so late at night. Pretty good. O Lord, O Supreme, unintelligent persons who thirst for sense enjoyment and who worship various demigods are no better than animals in the human form of life. Because of their animalistic propensities, they failed to worship your lordship, but instead they worship the insignificant demigods who are but small sparks of your glory. With the destruction of the entire universe, including the demigods, the benedictions received from the demigods also vanish, just like the nobility when a king is no longer in power. If one is made Sir Somebody or a Lord or a Duke or something by the nobility, by a king, when the king is no longer in power, when he's overthrown, then the nobility, not only do they vanish, they get out of town, but their titles have no meaning anymore. That also vanishes. So that which we can get from demigods, from powerful personalities in the material world, vanishes in the same way when the material world is destroyed. So materialistic people want materialistic benedictions and go to other materialists to gain those, but they will all be vanquished. So therefore, what Chitraketu is saying, we should not be like that. We should not be animalistic in that way. We should be intelligent and take shelter of that one who can give us eternal benefits. We should take shelter of the Lord. Prabhupada's purport. Bhagavad Gita 7:20 says, Kamas tastha vritigyana prapadyante anya devata. Those whose minds are distorted by material desires surrender unto the demigods. Similarly, this verse condemns worship of the demigods. We may show our respect to the demigods, or powerful people in the material world, because they are getting their power from the Lord. But the demigods are not worshipable. The intelligence of those who worship the demigods is lost, ritigyana, because these worshippers do not know that when the entire material cosmic manifestation is annihilated, the demigods, who are the departmental heads of that manifestation, will be vanquished. When the demigods are vanquished, the benedictions given by the demigods to unintelligent men will also be vanquished. Therefore, a devotee should not hanker to obtain material opulence by worshipping the demigods, but should engage in the service of the Lord, who will satisfy all his desires. Akama sava kama va moksha kama udaradi tivrena bhakti yogeni ajeta purushaparam. Whether full of material desires, free from material desires, or desiring liberation, a person who has broader intelligence must by all means worship the Supreme Whole, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Bhagavatam, 2nd Canto, 3rd Chapter, 10th Verse. This is the duty of a perfect human being. One who has the shape of a human being, but whose actions are nothing but those of an animal, is called Narapashu, or Dvipad Pashu, a two-legged animal. A human being who is not interested in Krishna consciousness, God consciousness, is condemned herein as Narapashu. And the final verse we'll read, and only half of the purport. O Supreme Lord, if persons obsessed with material desires for sense gratification through material opulence worship you, who are the source of all knowledge, and who are transcendental to material qualities, they are not subject to material rebirth, just as sterilized or fried seeds do not produce plants. Living entities are subjected to the repetition of birth and death because they are conditioned by material nature. But since you are transcendental, one who is inclined to associate with you in transcendence escapes the conditions of material nature. So one who seeks the Lord's shelter, even if possessing material desires, transcends birth and death, because his shelter, not like taking shelter of anything in the material world, is transcendental, because he's taking shelter of the Lord. Prabhupada's purport about half the way through. Even those who are obsessed with material desires may also come to worship the Supreme Lord so steadily that they go back to Godhead. The fact is that if one comes to Krishna consciousness, although he may have many material desires, he becomes increasingly attracted to the lotus feet of Krishna through associating with the Supreme Lord by chanting his holy name. The Supreme Lord and his name are identical. Thus he becomes uninterested in attachment to material enjoyment. The perfection of life is to be uninterested in material enjoyment and interested in Krishna. If one comes to Krishna consciousness somehow or other, even for material gain, the result is that he will be liberated. Kamad dveshadbayat snehat. Whether for the satisfaction of material desires, because of the influence of envy, because of fear, because of affection, or because of any other reason, if one comes to Krishna, his life is successful. So that verse is from the 7th canto, that kamadveshat bayat snehat. No matter what, if somehow one can focus his mind on God, on Krishna, even if his motivation isn't perfect, still, it will bring a perfect result in time. Somehow, focus the mind on Krishna, God. Okay, we'll end here. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Tirtha Keshava Maharaj ki jai.